Hello, beautiful. And what I'd really like to know is what's good in your life today? I'm Kia, and this is another episode of the Female Veterans Podcast. Today, I am so excited. I am so excited to have this guest with me. This is Dr. Ann Jeans. She is a financial expert and coach, and she is a 21-year Air Force veteran. So I'm thrilled to have her here because you know how I feel about helping our sisters. And financial is paramount. Financial help is so important. How we manage our money, how we eliminate our debt, that is how we thrive and how we build freedom and security for our lives. So this is important. You know, I have on here alternative health and not-for-profit organizations that can help us. But this is equally as important as any of those things. So I'm super excited to have you here, Dr. Ann.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having me. I'm glad our schedules was finally able to come together so we can make this happen. And happy new year to yourself. But I'm excited to talk about it. Anytime that I can talk about military and money, I'm in my happy place.
Good. So we're going to dive into it. But first, before we get into all that, I want to ask you, what made you join the military?
Oh, wow. What made me join the military? Well, at the time, right out of high school, you know, I wanted to go to college, but I was the youngest of three kids to a single mother. So I didn't want to put that burden, you know, on my mother to pay for college and stuff like that. So my older brother, he was already in the Air Force. So one summer I went to visit him and I liked what I saw. And mind you, I grew up as an Army brat. My stepfather was Army, so I knew I wasn't going to do that, right? I was like, yeah, no, I don't want to do PT every day and sleeping out in the field, that type of stuff. I don't want to do it. So my oldest brother, he was in the Air Force already, and once I went to visit him and I liked what I saw, I went down to the recruit station and joined up. So that's really it to get, you know, to get money from college. And also, I would like to say to get away from my mother because she was, it's true. You know, I thought I was grown, right? So I wanted to do what I wanted to do. I didn't want nobody telling me what to do and all this type of stuff. So in order to get that, I had to get out of her house.
I feel you on that. I'm going to say 100% on both of those points you just made. I needed money for college and they had the Montgomery GI Bill going at the time.
Yep.
And also, I was 19 years old. I had just turned 19. I went on a delayed enlistment. So I enlisted at 17 because I knew I wanted to go to college and I needed money. We came from a poor family. We just didn't have it. And I also want to say I didn't have people who, even though I went to private school, my counselors, I think, failed me in a sense because they did not explain to me all the options that I had. So as soon as I realized that military was an option, I thought it was my only option as a way to pay for college and all of that. Although it wasn't a bad choice, but I didn't know I had more options than that. And also, I was ready to be on my own. I was ready to do my own thing. And I was really tired of my mother telling me what to do and trying to control my life. So I feel that. Bless her soul. But I was ready. Exactly. So tell me, what was boot camp like for you?
Oh my goodness. It was, you know, I was ready because my brother kind of already gave me a heads up, you know, it was more so of a mind game. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I knew that, yeah, they're going to threaten you and do all this stuff that they really couldn't put their hands on you, you know, type of thing. So from what I remember, because girl, yeah, that's been a minute for me. but it was okay from what I, you know, the typical boot camp, but I survived and actually did it, you know, ended up doing it twice. Because once I, you know, went in and enlisted, I had to go to basic training. And then once I commissioned and became an officer, we had to do our officer form of basic training as well. So
yeah, it's field school. So I'm glad you brought that up because I love when I get a chance to talk to, I've had a handful of guests on this podcast who have been both enlisted and an officer. And I'm interested to hear what your perspective is on the differences between the two types of quote unquote boot camp?
Yeah, it was different. You know, when I did my officer field training, I was much older, mm-hmm. right? So it was harder for me because, you know, I had these young cadets, you know, talking about their Air Force and this and that. They hadn't even served type of thing. And when I switched over, yeah, I had 12 years in when I switched. So it was a lot harder for me, you know, mentally and physically too. Yeah, I had a child and everything by then. But, you know, an enlisted side, you know, it's that shock and awe, right? To break you down and to build you back up type of thing. Where on the officer side, it was more of, you know, to see your leadership capabilities, you know, and to be a follower, you know, that type of thing. So it was different. But like I said, the main thing that was challenging for me is because it was later in life for me and I knew better.
I bet. So tell me, what do you think is a better way of life? Because I always get asked this. Would you recommend for my daughter to go enlisted or as an officer? So you've done both. What would your answer be to that question?
Oh, man, that's a good one. I would have to say all the officers that was prior enlisted make the better officers.
Ooh.
Right?
Wow.
So with that, I would say, you know, they do. We do. That's what I always said. You know, I'm not your average lieutenant type of thing. So I would just say personally, to start off enlisted, to do the 4 years, you know, whatever, 4 or 6 years, so that you know what it's like to do the work of the people. If you want to switch over, now you're in this leadership position, you've been there. So you understand, you know, you can relate better versus, oh, I got a degree, I'm better than you, you know, type of stuff. So I would definitely say in an enlisted ranks, we're a tighter family than the officer ranks. You know, most officers were, you know, married with kids. You know, at the time I was single mother, you know, whereas the enlisted rank, you just had more fun too. You know what I'm saying? so I would say, you know, to start out enlisted, but, you know, if you have the idea that you want to make it a career, you know, the officer rank, you know, is definitely the way to go. For me, the reason why I switched over, two things. I felt like as an officer, I can make a bigger difference, right? By being in a leadership position, I can make changes, enforce them, that type thing. And two, I figured if I'm going to stay in, I might as well get paid, right? It goes back to the finances. It was. So, yeah, and that was the smartest decision. Come the first day every month, you know, I don't regret.
I feel you. You know what? I wanted to say that I was enlisted. And so when you talk about the enlisted side of things, I really felt that. And I had way more fun. And I always say this, I had way more fun than probably most people who serve in the military as enlisted. I was very lucky in a lot of aspects. It did get me into some trouble later, which will come out in the book. Stay tuned. But I did have a lot of fun. And while I was in, I thought, I just want to get out and go to college. This was never a career for me, right? This was a means to an end. But when I did get out, I realized how much I loved the experience. It wasn't so much being in the military per se, it was the people and the family and the camaraderie that you were just talking about of being enlisted, being a part of a tighter family. And I definitely felt that. And I also noticed that I had officers that were my age, right? And I definitely felt the disconnect. They did not understand how to lead us properly because they were new and they were learning. And I've interviewed a lot of officers who were young in the military and they talk about those struggles that they had to face. But as an enlisted person, I always kind of almost felt sorry for them in a way because I could see the disrespect. Like I could hear the talk, the rumors, the, you know, everything happening behind their backs, right, amongst the enlisted. And I would always think to myself, you know what, if that was me, it would be really, really difficult because it's hard to just, you know, you get respect based on what's on your collar, what's on your arm, right? And it's really hard mm-hmm. to respect someone based on the respect that young ensign, right? When they're your same age and you're looking at them like, I'm better trained than you. Like, what are you talking about? Like, you know, so it's, I can see how yep. difficult it would be and why it would be so beneficial to be enlisted before you become an officer. So speaking of being enlisted, I would like to know what that experience was like for you once you got on active duty.
Oh, man, it was great. Everything that I, well, for the most part, you know, it was great. You know, I left from California. My first duty station, before I get there, I was a personnelist, you know, human resources or whatever have you. My first duty station was South Dakota. I didn't even know where it was on the map. You know, I'm like, where the heck is South Dakota? So, yeah, no, it wasn't a good look for me. So as soon as I got there, I volunteered to go anywhere in the world. And I lucked up and got Italy.
Wow.
Yeah. So I went to Italy, and then in Italy, like many of us young women, first time away from home, shop, travel. That's why I got into money trouble. We'll talk about all that. But I also fell in lust, and my daughter was born in Italy. So Italy has a special place in my heart. And then just from there, you know, went to Germany, just different places, the traveling. I love the traveling. And I was fortunate being in personnel that I was able to, you know, back in the day at the education center, there was classes, you know, on base, you know, the online thing wasn't a thing yet. Mm-hmm. I'm dating myself, but, you know, I had the opportunity, my supervisors, they encouraged me to go to school, you know, and stuff like that. And I did. So, you know, but there was a point when I was stationed in, it was about 8 years, almost 10 years in, I was going to get out. Right. Because I was stationed in Texas and I hated my supervisor. I mean, I didn't care. And I made it known type of thing. I was going to get out. I had separation orders in hand. That's how close really? I was. Yeah. That's how close I was to one of my prior supervisor. He was like, "Ann, you know, don't make a life changing decision based off of person, you know, because people PCS come and go in the military. Mm-hmm. You don't like that person. Okay, well, he can move. You can move. Don't get out of the military." And once again, I was still a single parent, you know, that type of stuff. So, you know, I took his advice and decided to stay in. And from there, you know, I ended up PCSing because I volunteered to become an instructor at Keesler in Mississippi. And that's really where I found my place is by teaching, being up in front of the classroom and just teaching. I loved it. So, you know, I'm just thankful that I listened to that individual that gave me that advice, because I don't know where my life, you know, would be. I'm sure I'd be okay because I had an education, but I was doing it for the wrong reason. That's the thing. I didn't like the I didn't like the place. I didn't like the supervisor. But other than that, you know, besides, you know, hard personal problems, my daughter, she was diagnosed with special needs. Back then, you know, she was about 3. So autism wasn't a thing. They just said she was developmentally delayed. Right. So I didn't know. I'm like, what does that mean? You know, does that mean she'll be with me forever? You know, type of thing. Right. But yeah. But now she, you know, but now it's a thing. She's autistic. And so that was hard. That was life changing for me. But other than that, you know, no regrets.
I can imagine what that must have been like for you. I definitely had a supervisor. I had a supervisor that I loved, and he transferred. And then we got, he retired. It was a Master Chief. Shout out to Master Chief Painter. He was fantastic. I thought of him, he probably would hate this, but I thought of him like almost like a young grandfather in a way. Mm, wow. But he was probably old enough to be my dad, but I don't know why that's why I thought of him. But he was really young still, actually. But he was so funny and so fun and just really chill and a great leader and very well respected. And he made the environment more pleasant to be in. And I just loved him. And then he retired and we got a new chief, and it was just, at first it seemed like it was going to be okay. And then it was just, he made my life a little bit of a nightmare there for a while. Mm-hmm. And I ended up leaving. I worked in a clinic I was a hospital corpsman, and I worked in a clinic, and I decided to go to C school, and I wanted to decide which C school I wanted to go to. So I wanted to, I thought I did really well in hospital corps school and pharmacy. That was my best subject. And so I thought, let me go check out the pharmacy. And this girl wanted to transfer out. And I had been moved from medical records where I also taught classes, which I loved. That's another thing. I taught orientation classes at the clinic for all the new A school students coming in on that side of the base. So I loved that, right? And I was taken out of that role and put in triage, something I didn't want to do. I never wanted to be a PA or a doctor or a nurse or any of that kind of thing. So, but it was like sort of as a punishment, right? Because he didn't like me. And I'm just going to call a spade here, but it was a color issue. It was a racial issue. And it was apparent. It was so apparent that eventually he got moved, right? So I'm not just throwing shade. This was a legit situation. But I was not the only one who was targeted. So I ended up transferring to the pharmacy, which I loved. I actually never did go to C school. I just worked there for the rest of my career. And I loved doing pharmacy and working in the pharmacy. But that is why I ended up going there, because I had to escape this supervisor who was making my life a living hell. So I really identify what you were talking about there.
Yeah, it's rough, man. Day in, day out, looking at this person, it's just like, man, I ain't got to put up with this mess. Type of thing, but you know, hindsight is 20/20.
Good thing you didn't get out though, because you did a 21-year career. So tell me, so you got to travel, you got to go around Europe, you came back to the States, and you landed in your instructor position. What happened after that?
Gosh, what did happen after that? Oh, okay. So yeah, I was still enlisted. Then a program came out where, you know, if you already had your bachelor's degree, you can get out for like a year and work on your master's and go through ROTC, Reserve Officer Training Corps. And that's exactly what I did. You know, I got out for a year, used my GI Bill to get my master's degree, and then I came back enlisted. I went to the University of Southern Mississippi and graduated from there, and I was a financial officer once I commissioned. So, yeah. So now I'm on the other side of the fence, as they like to say. And it went well, too. So, yeah.
So you actually left for a year, got to be a civilian, but going ROTC.
Yeah.
So what was that like for you, having been enlisted?
Yeah. You know, once again, it was good because it was four of us. You know, I didn't know them in the beginning that we in the program, we commuted every week. Like, we was in Biloxi, but Southern Miss was like in Hattiesburg. So it's like an hour, hour and a half away. So we had commute, and we were all prior enlisted. So, you know, that was the cool part. But once again, you know, starting from the bottom, you know what I'm saying? And just having these, you know, cadets, you need to do this and you need to do that. You know, that was the hardest part for me, because I'm a very outspoken type person, and my Air Force this and my Air Force that. And I'm like, you ain't even commissioned yet. You ain't even been on active duty one day. Right. And here I had like 12 years in, man, get out of my face type of thing.
It's like a joke.
Yeah, but you know, that was the hardest part for me. And once again, when we went to field training, like I mentioned earlier, you know, you thought you was in shape and stuff like that. But when you're under that stress, I was older type of thing, but I made it through. So yeah, that's about it.
That's awesome. And then you just went back in as an officer. Obviously, you did field school, so we talked about that. And then you went back in. So what was it like at your first command as an officer?
It was cool. I was stationed in Alabama, and I'm originally from Georgia. So I'm like an hour and a half, if that, away from family, my aunts and stuff like that. Once again, it was different because I had never really worked with a bunch of civilians. Mm-hmm. You know, so the organization that I was with, it was a majority of civilians running things. You know, there was a few of us, you know, officers in there, but it was a majority of the civilians running things. So that was a little different to, you know, to get used to. And, you know, I had, once again, had to remind them that, you know, I'm not your average lieutenant. So don't let the butter bars fool you. You know, so my first duty station, it was a learning process, you know, just learning how to be, you know, an officer, what's expected, you know, type of thing. So, yeah, from there, I went to South Carolina, Shaw Air Force Base. And that's where I really, that's where everything came to a head, you know, as far as, OK, now I'm in it. I'm a financial officer. I'm leading people. You know what I mean? I had military and civilians underneath me and stuff like that. And it was just times that people would try me. Right. Because like I said, they look at the rank and think you're just a lieutenant. You don't know any better type of thing. So and I remember one incident with a Chief Master Sergeant E9, right, which is the highest rank in the Air Force. She was like, yo, yo, you need to come to my office, right? I was like, no, you come to mine. What the hell? What the hell? You know what I'm saying? I don't know what to tell me to come to your office, you know? And I'm like, no, my door is open. You can come to mine. So she eventually made her way in there and stuff like that. And we had to have a conversation. But it's just, you had to, just had to prove yourself, you know, more or less. And, you know, once they know the difference between a non-enlisted officer and one that was prior, right? So you just had to prove yourself. And my troops, yeah, they knew.
Where do you think it was that you actually found your footing, like the perfect blend of these two roles, and then it becomes effective in the field?
You know, I really think where I found my footing actually was, it was outside of the finance career, is when I went back to teaching. So I got a special duty assignment at the University of South Carolina, teaching Air Force ROTC.
That's amazing.
So full circle, right? I'm able to take all of my experience, my enlisted, my officer experience, because I was a captain by then, and to mold these young, you know, they're not even these young cadets. They're soon to be lieutenants. And to mold them and to teach them how to act when you, you know, get commissioned. Don't go in there thinking because you're a butter bar, this and that type of thing. That's really where it came full circle to me. Like I said, when I was in Mississippi enlisted, teaching is where I shine. So, yeah, it was when I became an ROTC instructor.
Wow, that's amazing. So out of both of these careers, what do you think were some of the challenges that you had to face? Like, let's start with enlisted. What were the most challenging things you faced as an enlisted person?
I would say the most challenging thing was myself, my outspokenness. You know, people, they tell you, oh, open door policy, we want to hear what you got to say, you know, that type of stuff. No, they don't. You know what I'm saying? They don't want to hear, they want to, you know, and I've been told many of times, you know, you don't have any tact. Because I'm very straightforward. Yeah, I've been told, enlisted and officer, I've been told that I don't have any tact. But I'm like, okay, I don't brown nose or kiss up, you know, that type of stuff. I'm a straightforward type person. So, and even to, you know, that's just like my personality. Growing up, I was that way. And my mom, even when I retired, she was like, I'm surprised you lasted because of your mouth. Wow. Right? Yeah. So my hardest part was just learning to restrain myself and not give it to everybody so raw all the time, you know what I mean? To kind of water it down sort of thing. And that was the biggest, yeah, that was the biggest thing. And, you know, and on the officer side, it was that, of course, you know, come on now, second, first lieutenant, young captain. Yeah, you couldn't tell me nothing about finance. I knew what the truth was doing. You know, I'm used to working. So I'm like, I couldn't stay in my office doing paperwork and stuff like that. I'm out. Yo, let me put my own stuff in. Let me give me something to do type of thing. So that was, you know, a challenge for me, you know, realizing my role now as a leader. And also, once again, dealing with, you know, now not only am I an officer, I'm a Black officer and I'm a woman. Right. So like you said, color came into play. I mean, a lot of times I remember one time I had went, you know, I went natural. I was wearing my natural hair and that type stuff. And this major, I think he was like, he said, what are those thingies in your hair? He got a Black History Month education that day, okay?
Well, sometimes it's needed because it's just innocent ignorance, right? It's innocent ignorance, but it's ignorance nonetheless. So an education, education is required. People who don't know any better, that's who say that. And it's like, for us, we're like, are you kidding me? Is this a joke? Are there cameras going to come out? Like, you're really saying something like that to me and this at this time, in this age? Like, this is where we are, you know? But on the other flip side of that, it is what a lot of it, sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's malicious intent. But sometimes it is innocent ignorance that requires education. And I think that
he got education.
He needed some education, unless it was malicious intent. I think you know when they approach you, which one it is.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So it's just stuff like that. You know, like I said, enlisted, we was tighter officers. You know, they just, they don't like to have fun. Like you said, I'm used to going to the club and stuff like that. But yeah, but they would invite Becky over for dinner, but they wouldn't invite Ann.
Oh, no.
Right. You know, stuff like that. But it all worked out how it was meant to work out.
Yeah. I mean, I think even so, you know, there's layers to this service thing. You know, there's the layer of being a woman, right? And then feeling like, I mean, 9 out of 10 times we feel like we have to do the work better. You know, and with less recognition, you know, but we have something to prove. So we're already going into this culture, enlisted or as an officer, having to prove ourselves with it. We're coming from below the bar. We just have to work harder at the same job for less recognition. So we already have that coming in. And then there's all these other layers. Like if you're any sort of ethnicity, any sort, you're Black, you're Native American. I just did an episode on with some Native American women, right? And I mean, I was mind blown about how marginalized they feel in the service, right? Wow. So it's like any ethnicity, you know, that you have that on top of being a woman, right? And so there's these layers to service and to pushing through it and overcoming it and finishing your obligation of service or deciding you're going to retire and doing 21 years and like navigating that. So I guess my next question for you is, how did you navigate that for 21 years?
You know, I just stayed focused. You know what I mean? So like once I decided I was going to stay in, like when I switched over, I had 12 years in, you know, so, you know, I just stayed focused on, you know, getting to the retirement part, just getting as much education as I could type of thing. And my priority, you know, was my daughter, you know, giving her the best life, you know, didn't know what her future would look like, that type of stuff. And it's just reached out, got involved as much as I could in organizations where I did feel comfortable with people that looked like me type of thing. So just really staying focused on the long term because I knew that it was all temporary. You know, and sure enough, normally officers have to do, you know, 10 years before they're able to retire as an officer rank. But once again, something came out that said you can only have to have 8. And I was out there. It was so, and the thing about it that's so funny, and I was teaching at ROTC, and my commander, my boss, he knew my desires. He knew I was ready to go, you know, type of thing, especially after I got deployed for a year to Iraq. He knew that I was ready to go. So funny story is I was on leave. I had took a couple of days of leave or whatever, stayed in the area. And then my boss called me and I knew he know don't call me on leave, you know, type of thing. So and that's what he said. He was like, yo, you know, I know not to call you. He said, but I just sent you an email and I think you'd be very interested. So I said, OK. So I looked at the email and it was about saying you can retire early. You know, this window had opened up. You know, it was they only taking a certain number, that type of stuff. Girl, I went in off a leave that same day and put in my paperwork.
Wow. You were not playing.
He said, well, dog, and I figured you'd wait till you come back off a leave, but I think I see you like a couple hours later. I said, well, they said, you know, first come, first serve type of thing, you know? So, yeah, so I was able to, yeah, but yeah.
That is amazing. I just think it's hilarious that you were that ready. You were that ready that you were on leave and you were like, oh, I'm first in line.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. You have what they say, you have to stay ready so you don't get ready, right? Mm-hmm. So I had planned, I had prepared financially, you know, mentally, you know, I was just ready. My degree, you know, I didn't have my doctorate then, I had my master's. I'm good. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't have, you know, all that type stuff. Yeah, I was ready. Stayed ready.
Wow, that is amazing.
Yeah.
That is amazing. So I know that we talked about some of the hurdles you face. And, you know, we were just talking about being a woman and being a woman of color or other ethnicities that are marginalized in the military. But you were also a single mom with a special needs child. Yeah. How did that affect your military career?
Yeah, well, you know, the good thing about it is that they wouldn't send me. I was in this program, EFMP, the Exceptional Family Member Program. Mm-hmm. And that's a program if you have a family member with special needs, they would vet the place, the base, to make sure that they had the services to meet your child, your dependent's needs before they sent you to that place. So I knew that no matter where I went, it would have to be somewhere that they could meet my daughter's needs. So that was, you know, a great thing. Still had an awesome relationship, still do, with my daughter's father. We co-parent very well. He get her every summer, you know, that type thing. So no complaints, holidays, no complaints there. And also, you know, my family members, you know, when I got tagged with that deployment to Iraq, my daughter was, I think, in high school, and I didn't want her, you know, I could have sent her to her dad, but she needs stability, you know. Mm-hmm. So my mother actually relocated from California to South Carolina so she can stay with my daughter while I deployed, you know. So
that's beautiful.
It was rough. It was rough leaving her. But when I came back, I was really ready to get out. I was ready before I left, but that was really like, oh no, heck no. But, you know, just once again, that sense of family, you know, that was there for me to help me. Yeah, I was just fortunate to find care providers that treated my daughter as their own. I can drop her off, getting recalled 5 o'clock in the morning, doing PT at 6, you know, I can drop her off and not have any worries, you know, type of thing. So they became really more family to me than anything. So yeah.
That is a blessing.
It is
an absolute blessing because it's hard out here. You know? Especially if you're in the military and you have to deploy. I'm just thinking about your mom and moving across the country to come and help you out while you were deployed. That is just amazing.
Yeah. I mean, she had left California over 30 years we lived out there. But, you know, I asked her, you know, and I'm like, yo, I don't want to send Kayla. That's my daughter's name, Kayla, to her dad. You know, I could. I knew that wouldn't be a problem. But, you know, just she was older and just routine and structure is best for her. And so she didn't hesitate and came. So
amazing. And what was that deployment like for you? I imagine made better because you didn't have those worries.
Right. It definitely was. You know, I was like, OK, I had never been deployed before. I think I had got hit when I was like 18 years in. I had never deployed and got hit with that deployment. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, OK, if I'm going to get deployed, I'm going to make the most of it. So I prepared all the extra money that we got while serving, just banking it, you know, for when I retire, just banking it. I paid off, you know, debt, my house, just banking it. So, yeah, I just made the most of it. That was the first time I was deployed working in a joint environment. So I was in the finance office, J8. It was Air Force, Army, Navy, Marine, civilian, you know, and it's just like, wow, just to see the different services working together. And I know I was fortunate that, you know, the time that I went, Iraq wasn't a hotbed like Afghanistan. Right. So I'm like, I'm thankful, you know what I'm saying? It could have been worse, you know, type of thing. So it wasn't that bad. You know, it definitely helped, you know, to prepare me, you know, on my journey for when I eventually retired and stuff like that. So, but it was to deal with it, you know, as far as my daughter was concerned, I didn't call home very often. I kind of withdrew myself. You know what I mean? I might have called like once a month, or I'll talk to my brother versus my mother. You know what I mean? I'll get the scoop and stuff like that, because I knew, you know, talking to my daughter would make it harder for me. So I just wouldn't talk to her as often, but I talked to her. But that's how I dealt with things, is to kind of detach myself. Like, I know she's straight. I don't need to be calling, asking what's this, what's that, you know, ain't nothing I can do, you know, right, type of thing. So, yeah, so that's really how I dealt with it, is kind of detach myself.
Wow, that's pretty incredible. How long were you deployed to Iraq for?
A year.
Wow.
1 full year over there. Yep.
Well, thank God it wasn't too much more than that, because, you know, I mean, I'm a single mom, so I can't even imagine leaving my two boys, you know, for a whole year anywhere. Like, I can't imagine all the kinds of strategies I would have to come up with in order to make that work. So, I mean,
yeah,
you know, I definitely understand doing what you have to do to get through that year. And then just after that, being really ready, like, okay, I'm ready to, I'm good.
Yeah, y'all got me. I'm ready now. I've been ready, but I'm really ready now. And it was shortly thereafter that I got the notification that I can get out early. So, yeah.
So it all worked out beautifully. So
it all worked out.
So tell me, what was the transition out like for you?
It was great. You know what I'm saying? I like, you know, that's why I think part of my purpose is that not all transitions have challenges, right? Mm-hmm. You can successfully prepare for your transition out of the military. Preparation, you know, and I always like to say that, you know, it's inevitable. You got to get out sooner or later. You can't stay in. So the sooner that you start preparing for it, planning for it, the easier that it would be. So, yeah, I didn't have any problems. I'm telling you, I really didn't have any problems. I think the only main problem, you know, dealing with the VA, you know, as far as benefits and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, other than that, I knew that I wasn't going to go try to get no job right away, because I had prepared for it. I wanted to take at least a year off doing whatever the heck I wanted to do. And that's exactly what I did. I traveled, I sat around, did whatever I want to do. And people were like, aren't you bored? I'm no, I am not. type of thing. So I was just prepared, you know, and I didn't have any problems. Not to say that, you know, I know people do. Mm-hmm. But that's not the case all the time. So, yeah.
A lot of people do, actually. A lot of people. Over the years since I got out, which, you know, I got out before 9/11. So, we're just going to date myself.
Okay.
And so, over the years from the time that I got out, I struggled to figure out, you know, I struggled after I got out. I thought it was going to be so happy. Let me tell you how I was, like, counting down like I was in prison to the day I would be out of the military. And when I got out, it was such a shock. It was such a culture shock going into corporate America, and everything that I did, I was not prepared. I didn't feel prepared. I went to TAPS. I did not feel prepared. I was not prepared, but I also was 25 years old.
Yeah, right? That's a big difference.
So had I known a lot of the stuff I've learned from actually doing these interviews, I would have been a lot better off. But I also learned a lot in the first few years after I got out, which I turned around and helped other veterans, because a lot of veterans have trouble understanding what their benefits are and how to get them.
Yeah.
You know, and then especially if you have disabilities like I do, like, and how to fight for your disabilities and all of that stuff. A lot of people really don't know, or a lot of people have a bad experience in the military. And when they get out, they want to just forget.
Yeah.
But they don't take advantage of those benefits that we earned by becoming property of the United States government. Right. So I try to encourage people to do that. And I've done that this whole time, which has led me to this podcast, which is the next evolution of that. Right.
Yes.
But I have interviewed like a handful of people who have said the same thing as you, who have said, if you properly plan and you take care of your finances and you start thinking ahead, your transition out can be really, really smooth. So I love that you said that, because it, you know, it's true from what I've seen and heard from other guests as well. And seeing what they're doing now is also proof of that. So you also, speaking of podcasts, you also have an encore career now after you took your year off. So, and your podcast is part of that. But I'm interested to know how you took this year off, and how did you get here coaching and with a podcast and helping veterans live their best lives? How did you get from there to here?
So, like I said, I took that year off, and granted, okay, after about a year, I'm like, okay, well, let me see. Maybe I'll get a little part-time job, you know, because I was working to pay off my house at the time. You know, that's the only debt that I had. So I'm like, I want to pay off my debt early. So I actually got a job with the VA, but that only lasted 2 months.
2 months? What happened?
Girl, that only lasted. Two things happened. The job wasn't like, the description wasn't what I thought it would be. I thought I was going to be working directly with veterans, you know, and stuff like that. But it was more behind the scenes, putting stuff in a system, in a computer. I didn't have any reactions with veterans, that type stuff. So I'm like, yeah, nah, this ain't doing it. And then when they start talking about, you know, that's when the VA was behind people, you have to work overtime and stuff like that. I knew. I thought, I'm retired. Overtime is not in my vocabulary. So I said, I put in my 2 weeks.
I feel that.
Okay. But it goes back to being prepared, right? Mm-hmm. If, when you prepare, you can do stuff like that. I mean, and the lady actually tried to tell me, well, you still have to do your, you know, mandatory overtime. I said, I'm not doing it. Now, I cannot come back after lunch. Or I can put in my 2 weeks. What choice you want to take? What is it? You know, type of thing. But so that didn't work for me. So I knew at that point I wasn't going to be able to work for nobody else. You know what I'm saying? My mindset was too freedom. I don't want nobody telling me what to do. You know, that type of thing. So I decided to go to school. I had my Montgomery GI Bill, and I'm like, okay, well, I might as well use it. And that's how I became Dr. James. It's a doctorate of education in organizational leadership. And then when part of it, you know, all along the way, I actually did volunteer at the Vet Center. It's called the Veterans Center. And there was a young lady in there, and I'm always talking about money, you know what I mean? Like Dave Ramsey and stuff like that. So I gave her the book because she was a single parent, had three kids, you know, that type stuff. So one day she asked me, when are you going to start doing the stuff you keep talking about with money? So she like basically called me out, right? Oh. So I'm like... Well, you're right, you know, type of thing. Yeah. And that's really where, you know, I decided to become, you know, a financial coach, you know, and launch my business, Financial Freedom Battle Buddies, to, you know, help my fellow veterans, specifically women veterans, you know, take command of their money so that they can live a life of freedom that they deserve. Like you said, we fought for it. We deserve it. So that's really my mission, is how I became, you know, a financial coach, really basing it off of my own story. As you mentioned, I'm a single parent. It was during that time, you know, I had debt. I had at one point over $300,000 in debt.
Wow.
Yeah, but I was able to, by following this framework that I, you know, came up with, able to pay that off in 3 years.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So I'm like, if I can do it, anybody can, right? And don't get it twisted. This was before the Dr. Ann came. Mm-hmm. So I'm not a medical doctor. I ain't getting paid all this money. I'm living off my military retirement and disability. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's why I figured if I can do it as a single mom of a special needs child, then anybody can do it. There's nothing special about me. You know, I just put in the work and educated myself. And that's why I'm here to help others. So that's how the coaching thing came to be. And, you know, the podcasting, that was like a passion project. I was like, man, what am I going to actually, I take that back. I was at this conference and I met these two people. We just started talking one night over drinks, and they was like, you need to start a podcast. And I'm like, what? I didn't even, You know, no, you need to get on there and tell your story so you can encourage other women veterans and stuff like that. So I was like, huh. Then I met, you know, Amanda?
Yeah.
Yeah. I met Amanda at that same conference and I was like, that's what I want to. I want to do that.
Women of the Military podcast.
Yeah, Women of the Military podcast. But once I started doing my research, I wanted to differentiate myself a little bit, right? What I noticed was there wasn't a podcast out there that focused on women veterans of color. And we have unique, you know, everybody being a woman is one thing, like you said, but being a woman of color is something totally different.
That's true.
So that's where, once I knew that's where my lane was, yeah, it'll be 2 years in February, next month, February 1st. Be my
congratulations.
Thank you. I'm still newbie at all this. I'm still newbie, but I love it. Like you said, just hearing everybody's stories and experiences.
It's life-changing. I think doing this podcast has really changed my life for the better, but just by connecting with veteran sisters.
Yeah.
There's nothing like it. There's nothing like it.
Yeah.
And hearing their stories and the good ones and the bad ones and just connecting with them and sometimes being able to contribute to their healing and sometimes they contribute to mine. And Absolutely. It's just an amazing, amazing thing. So I definitely am excited to see what you're doing and to hear your podcast. Freedom Battle Buddies of Color podcast. Everybody should go check it out and support her. I am, you know, I'm not one of those people that, like, if you ask me where I got my blouse, I'm going to tell you. I'm not one of those people that have to be like, oh, I don't know where I got it. You know, there's females that are like that. I'm not one of those females.
Absolutely.
So I think there's enough room for everybody. We have to help each other up. When we one go up, we all go up. So I love interviewing female veterans who are doing podcasts. Amanda is one of them. When I started this podcast, there were a handful of veteran podcasts, even fewer for female veterans and military, and hers is active and veteran. And so when I came along, mine was only female veterans. Gotcha. So she was the only one before me. And I connected with her and she helped to promote my show and I helped to promote her show. And from that, I've been anybody that has a podcast that's sharing, doing this work. We are a community. We are a family of sorts.
Absolutely.
And we're all out here with the same mission, just like when you're in the military and you have to, you're a part of a team with a mission. It's mission oriented. We're all doing our part to help our veteran sisters come up in this world. And I think that's amazing work that you're doing. And financial work is so incredibly important.
Yeah.
It's so incredibly important. There are so many people struggling with debt and struggling and just it's the number one cause of divorce. It's like, it's a number one stressor in life itself. And and especially in these days and times where we're having economic hardship with supply chain issues and inflation and all of these things that are impacting our country as a whole. And globally, actually, having the skill set to manage your money is crucial. So I wanted to ask you, you know, what types of things do you coach with your clients? How do you help them become financially free?
Yeah, basically, how I help women that come to me seeking help is I walk them through like this framework that I have. It's called the Freedom Framework, right? And it's just broken down step by step to work with them holistically. You know what I mean? It's more than about the numbers. We got to start with this mindset. That's really where it starts, right? I can talk numbers all day, but if you don't get your mind right, right? It's a lot to it. So we really start with, you know, the mindset. We firm up that foundation, you know, whether it's creating a budget or a spend plan, whatever you want to call it, it's needed, that type of stuff. And then working with them to eliminate debt, that's the biggest one. You know, a lot of people, you know, come with shame and guilt about how much debt they have and stuff like that. And so just really helping them. There's a, you know, a way to get out of debt. There's no secrets to it, but, you know, you have to do what's comfortable for you, mm-hmm. right? Each person's journey, you know, I think financial freedom is a journey, not a destination. So each person's journey is different. And so that's how I approach it. So it's just really walking them through my freedom framework, you know, based on meeting them where they are with the needs that they have.
Wow. I think that's so important what you said about mindset, because a lot of us, they don't teach financial literacy in school. I think two of the most important things they should teach in school is emotional intelligence and financial literacy and mindset and mindset work, you know? And so I think that is so critical to understand, like when I had, so, you know, full disclosure, when I was in the military, I got into a financial hole and I had to go meet with a financial counselor, and I had no idea of anything about anything financial. I didn't understand how to manage money. I was 20, right? And I was on my own, first apartment, like first car, and I was about going out and having fun with my friends, and I did not understand how to make a budget. How to, you know, save money, how any of that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the best things, it was horrible in the moment because I was into financial trouble and then I was sent to the financial counselor. And I felt it humiliating in the moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
And shameful. Yeah. There was a deep sense of shame around it. And I think a lot of people feel that when it comes to finances. Mm-hmm. And when you're not managing them well, or there's a poverty mindset, right? But it was the best thing that happened to me because it started me to learn these things that they don't teach in school, right? And I went to a really good private school and I still didn't really learn truly how to manage my finances. So, I would love to know what, so when we come to you to coach, right? If I signed up as a client, what would my experience be like?
Oh, well, your experience, you're going to get some tough love. No, you know, I am, like I said, a straightforward person, you know, but there's no judgment, no biases. There's no, oh, you're Dr. This and you're not. You know, it's not none of that. It's just like, just if you're ready to do the work, you know, a lot of people think that, oh my God, I want to save money. I want to do this, but it's not going to happen overnight, you know, type of thing. So that's why I tell people it's not an overnight thing. But if you trust the process, if you work this framework, how I teach you to work it, you will be well on your way. To, you know, reaching your goals, whatever, you know, whatever that is. But as I mentioned, we start off with, you know, your mindset work to what's driving you, what's your why, right? My why was I had a special needs child, right? You have to have a strong why to carry you through the rough times. You know, this is a journey. It's not overnight, so it may take some time. So you have to have something that's motivating you. So I help you with that to help you drill down. We firm up that foundation to give you the big picture of your financial situation. You'll be surprised at how many people, you know, we don't take the time to look at the big picture, how much it's coming in, where it's going out, you know, oh, how much I'm spending over here. I spent that much eating out. You know they may eat out a lot, but once you see them numbers, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, type of thing. So I help them to see, oftentimes it's the first time, a complete financial picture, you know, of their situation. And then we come up with a personalized plan based on your individual goals, based on your values and beliefs, not mine, right? I'm just here as a guide on your journey. This is your journey, not mine. So it's like Yes, I provide you tools and resources, but I can't make you use them. If you're set on doing something, oh, I want to try this, of course, I'm going to try to persuade you to try it my way, because if your way were, we wouldn't be working together, right? right? But sometimes you have to let people, you know, figure it out for themselves. But it's very structured, not so much structured that, you know, you have to have flexibility. And another thing too, I always reassure my clients is that I'm all about freedom and I'm all about fun. I'm not here to try to tell you to deprive yourself. You can't do this. You can't do that. No, not at all. You can do whatever it is you want to do. If you have the money, you just got to budget for it. You just got to have a plan for it and have at it. So, that's what you get. You know that you're working with an expert that not only talks the talk, she's walked that walk, right? So there's one thing to work with somebody to help you with their money where they still, their money might not be straight, you know, or they still may be in debt type of thing. So I know, you know, the struggles. I've been there. And the main thing I like to tell people, especially when they're dealing with debt, absolutely, you can get out of debt, sure, but can you stay out?
Ooh! I mean, that's big.
That's it. We can do a lot of things. We can lose weight. We can lose 5 or 10 pounds, but can you keep it off? Mm-hmm. Right? It's that lifestyle change, those little changes, those habits that you have to put in play. So, like I said, that you can eventually live that life of freedom that you deserve. So that's mm-hmm. what you know could expect. Yeah.
That is incredible. And I'm really excited because you have been so generous and given a free gift for the audience, for my listeners, for all my sisters out here that are supporting this show. So you are offering a interactive spend plan. So tell me what that is and how we get it.
Yeah, basically, you know, from working with clients and just hearing people talk, oh, I'm not good with numbers. You know, I don't like doing a budget. It's too much, too many different things. So what I did was created this interactive spend plan that it does the math for you. It has categories in there. You just put the numbers in there, like, so you put your income in there and then it does the math. You put 10% over here, 20% over there. You don't have to do the math. It does it for you. It's a great starting place for, you know, someone that may feel like I'm not good with math or what do I include? You know, it's that foundation. I know people may hear the word budget and, you know, it's a bad word, but baby, you can't reach financial freedom without having some type of plan. Mm-hmm. Right. So, and that interactive spend plan is just that. It's a start, you know, for individuals that, hey, just plug and play. Just plug and play.
Well, and just I'm keep repeating excited.
So, yeah.
That is awesome. I am too excited about it. I am so excited to share it with the listeners. As you all know, it will be in the notes. There's a link and you just copy and paste that link from the show notes, which is the description of this episode underneath the title, where you can read what this episode is about. If you keep scrolling down, you'll find the link. You will also find Dr. Ann's link tree, which you can also copy and paste, and you can find out how to connect with her and book her and actually find out about her events she has coming up. And I know you have two of them coming. So what's coming up for you that we can support you with?
Yes, yes. Thank you so much. So the first event is going to be happening around the 1st of February. It's my 2-year podcast anniversary. So I'm going to have like a podcast party. It's just a way of me. I love knowing that individuals listen to me, but if I can connect those ears with a face and actually be able to talk to you, you can ask me questions. We can just talk, just get on there and chat. That's what the podcast party is going to be about. But then in March, I'm going to be opening back up the enrollment for my what's called your Conquer Your Debt program. It's a 12-week group coaching program that walks you through that framework, that freedom framework that I mentioned to you, that if you want to start your journey to get out of debt, this is the framework that I use personally, $300,000 over 3 years, or that I work with my clients with as well. So yeah, if one of your goals for the year is to eliminate debt, then definitely check me out, Conquer Your Debt. But you can find all of that information out at my website, which is on the link tree, but it's www.drannjanes.com.
Outstanding. Okay, so one more question for you before we wrap it up, because I want to be respectful of your time. So with all of this, I got so much from you today about being prepared, and that applies not just to transitioning out of the military, but pretty much every aspect of life, right?
Absolutely.
Mindset, setting goals, creating a budget, all of these good things that you've given us already, but I'm going to ask you for one more piece of advice. So what advice would you have for our veteran sisters coming up behind you?
Wow. I would say to just take some time and envision the life that you want to have outside of the military, just your life in general, and just know that it can happen for you. There is life outside of the military. You can successfully transition. You can have, you know, a successful life of freedom. But yeah, to me, it, once again, it just goes back to just being prepared, whatever that means, right? Whether it's your mindset, you know, your finances, because you never know what's going to happen. You never know. Day by day, tomorrow can be you here one day and gone the next, right? So just having some type of, you know, idea or what you want your life to look like and some plan in place and start where you are. It don't have to be this big old fancy, smassy, interactive spin plan that I'm providing, right? Hey, you can take it old school and get pencil and paper and a calculator. You know what I'm saying? Just get it out of your head and on paper, but just start where you are and just give yourself some grace and don't beat yourself up for past mistakes. Oh, how could I? Oh, I'm this old and I'm still doing this and dealing with that. Like you said earlier, we don't know what we don't know, right? A lot of this stuff wasn't talked about. I know it wasn't in my house growing up. It wasn't taught in school. So you have to kind of self-educate yourself. But with doing that, at some time you realize that doing it alone is not working for you, then don't be afraid to reach out for help. And it don't have to be working with a coach like paying me. There's a lot of free resources, you know, online, especially I know if you're still serving, you know, they have those counselors that you talked about at a lot of the different installations. You know, don't be shame or don't carry any type of stigma, you know, to ask for help in any part of your life, not just your finances, but, you know, physically, mentally. VA disability, anything you need help, you know, you just, like my mother always said, a closed mouth don't get fed. So just, you know, don't be afraid to ask for help. So start where you are.
Beautiful advice. I mean, I think I have another podcast called Hot Topics Live, hashtag podcast. And on that one, we're always talking about mindset and creating the life of your dreams. And I actually would really love to invite you to come be a guest on that podcast also, because I think that financial literacy is so important, especially in communities of color, in the school systems, in poor neighborhoods of any color. I mean, it is just a poverty mindset that is generational. And I think if we can start to break those chains, everybody can just, we deserve to be living our best life. And that is exactly what that podcast is all about. And this one in a way too, is about finding your way to living your best life because you deserve it. You know,
you deserve it. Like I said, we fought for those of us, you know, veterans and stuff like that. We fought for it. You know what I mean? Whether you deployed or not deployed, you serve your country, which majority of Americans have not done. So you deserve, I like to say, you deserve the life of freedom that you fought for other people to enjoy. Their life of freedom. What about your own?
That, I mean, you know, amen to that.
Girl, I get hyped on that. I get hyped.
We could do a whole nother hour discussing just that. But I want to be respectful of your time. And I just want to say thank you so much for being a guest on the show. I'm so glad we got a chance to connect. Lord knows I've been having a lot of health issues. And so I've been a little bit slower in production, but I am so glad to be able to connect with my veteran sisters and still be producing episodes to put out to sort of help the veteran community. And I'm thrilled that you could come and be a part of the show.
Oh, thank you so much. Like you said, this isn't no competition, it's collaboration. Mm-hmm. So anytime that we can spread the word about the fastest growing segment of the veteran population, then we need to do that. So thank you so much.
That's right. There is enough for all of us. And I hope everybody will go and check out your podcast. Where can we listen to it?
Anywhere you stream, you know, Apple, Google, Spotify, all of those places. My website, as I mentioned before, drannjanes.com. You can find me on Facebook, Ann James, LinkedIn, Dr. Ann James, Instagram, Dr. Ann James, you know, just
it's everywhere.
I make it easier, you know, Dr. Ann James.
Perfect. Well, as you all know, if you've been following this show, you will be able to find all that information in the show description box, the show notes, and go and support Dr. Ann. And again, it's been such a pleasure to have you on the show with me.
Thank you so much, sis.
And with that, we're going to wrap it up. I want to thank you all for coming on this journey with me, for continuing to support this podcast. Don't forget to go check out Grunt Style. I mean, I still love them so much. And I believe if you have your first order and you use code BAKER at checkout, you get 10% off. So that's at gruntstyle.com. It's a company run by mostly veterans. It's a veteran-owned company, employed with over 200 veterans, I think. And they have merchandise, apparel, and stuff like that. So it's a really cool company. I've mentioned it before on several podcast episodes. And I'd like to thank them for being my very first sponsor I ever had for this podcast, for the Female Veterans Podcast. And also, thank you for your reviews on Apple. Please keep them coming. It helps spread the word of the podcast. And don't forget, you can follow me on Twitter at FemVetPodcast and on Instagram at the Female Veterans Podcast. And I love you guys. And I'll talk to you next time.